Mobility Matters is supported with funding from the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration in the interest of information exchange. The NJTPA and FHWA assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore. A thought just then occurred to me I never thought before. I've been a lot of places, seen pictures of the rest. But of all the places I can't think of, I like Jersey best. Betting halls and shopping malls and good old...
Good morning and welcome to Mobility Matters. I'm your host, Bill Neary. I want to thank you for joining in. For those of us who are new to the show, I am the Executive Director of Keep Middlesex Moving, Middlesex County's nonprofit transportation management association. For over 30 years, Keep Middlesex Moving has been working with commuters, employers, local, county, and state governments to reduce traffic congestion, improve air quality, and we do promote traffic congestion, traffic issues that we see on the highways. We also promote carpools and vanpools, mass transit usage, and of course, bicycling and walking. We provide timely information about road and transit conditions. We present safety programming for children, for teens, and adults. You see, not only does mobility matter, safety does just as well. Today, I'm lucky enough to have my guests, and they'll cover the topic of sustainability. Remember, Monday was Earth Day, and both they're going to be talking about on a state and on a local level. Our guests are Dr. David Robinson. He's Rutgers Distinguished Professor and New Jersey's State Climatologist. We have Randall Solomon, the Executive Director of Sustainable Jersey, and Mayor Gail Brill-Mittler, the Mayor of Highland Park. I want to thank you all for joining us today. So we'll get some started with our first guest, David Robinson. Dr. Robinson, I think it's important for people to understand a little bit about you, about climatology, and what's the difference between some of climatology and meteorology. So you can give us a little explanation, maybe a little 101.
A great start. Thanks for having me, first of all. Climatology is the long term. It's what we've seen in the past in terms of our weather and our environment, and it's what we look at in the future. But there's really just a very fine line between meteorology and climatology. Meteorology is the day-to-day. It's today. It's the next week or two. But underpinning it all is our climate system on which the day-to-day weather is built. Although others will turn around and say meteorology, climatology is what you expect, and weather is what you get. But then what we expect just may not be too static as people once thought it was.
And Bob Dylan always said, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. There you go. Yeah. Climatology is certainly a little bit more intense in terms of long-term past and future. So what does a state climatologist do?
Yeah. Well, I'm a professor at Rutgers and appointed by the dean of the Agricultural Experiment Station via a long-ago decree of the governor back in the 70s, Governor Byrne. I've been the state climatologist for going on 28 years now. And our goal as a state climate office is to help people make decisions that are climate and weather wise. So we'll take on all comers who have an issue dealing with weather and climate. And when you think about it, it's just about everything. It's transportation, mobility. It's tourism, it's agriculture, it is health, it is safety, and there are always questions that come into the state climate office that we can help people make decisions, be it decisions during Sandy. We have a weather network of 65 stations around the state that every 5 minutes provide a wealth of information on wind and temperature and precipitation. We have a volunteer network that gathers precipitation data around the state on a daily basis, which helps when, particularly when drought encroaches on the state. But last year was interesting to see just how very wet we were, the wettest year on record going back to 1895. So we have all this wealth of information, and we use it to help people make decisions. And at the same time, we're also striving for a better understanding of New Jersey's weather and climate.
Well, by decisions, you mean I had to mow my lawn in October last year. There's so much grass growing. But at the same time, that's what makes it interesting. You say there's 65 stations throughout the state. We're a little state. We're a little tiny state. The climate is amazing. That it can change, or the weather can change in a matter of 30 miles.
You know, that's what I love about Jersey. Not only do we have the spatial variations, these days it can be 20 or 30 degrees cooler along the coast in spring due to the cool waters nearby than it is inland. But then we also have the four seasons. So we get a taste of about everything. And fortunately, for the most part, with the exception of an Irene or a Sandy, an occasional blizzard, we tend not to get the worst of it. There are worse tornadoes elsewhere. There are generally worse hailstorms elsewhere, worse hurricanes. But we get a taste of everything. I would be bored if I lived in San Diego and had the same weather basically every day. And that's what I love about Jersey. I grew up in the state, too, so I was born and raised on the weather and climate of the state.
And you are talking about some significant changes that happened with the weather itself, with Sandy and Irene, which changed things. And I think that's where it ties into what you were saying about how climatology and climate mean so much for the entire economy and the entire way we have our quality of life here in New Jersey. I think it's important that you keep an eye on those things. So do you have any ideas about how things can change in the future? It seems from what I hear, it's not going as well as we'd like.
Yeah, well, we've seen change. Naturally, the climate has changed over millennia and longer. We had ice sheets up in North Jersey 20,000 years ago. But we're seeing in some of our lifetimes are significant changes. The state is warm since the 60s and early 70s by about 3 to 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit. We're seeing more rainfall. We just had our two wettest years going back to the 19th century in 2011, and we surpassed that record in 2018. So we're seeing more extremes as well, because we still have occasional drought, although we've dodged significant drought since 2002. So things are always changing, but we've noticed some profound changes in recent decades that dovetail with what we've seen globally. And with that, there are a lot of concerns about what the future may bring.
Well, I think that's why today's topic is sustainability. We're going to have to look at what those changes and how they're going to affect what we're going to be looking in the future, the investments we have to make and the protections we have to do in order to protect whatever we can do and
absolutely.
At the same time preserve what we have.
Absolutely.
So I know with sustainability, there's a lot of programs going on without the state. We'll be talking to Randy about it and the mayor. But on a statewide level, the climatologist is very important to give that data to make us have some information.
Yeah. We don't pretend to know what everybody is going to decide. We don't tell them what they need. We listen to them and work with them to help them better understand what's going on and to make decisions, be it the here and now or looking down the road in the future.
Well, our little Keep Middlesex Moving tries to work our best with the environmental questions about that in terms of transportation pollution, if that's the right way to put it, because we know how much transportation does add to the atmosphere. And those are the types of things we're looking at into the future that we have to do. Is there any specific thing that you think that's going to be immediate that we have to worry about, like our rising tides?
Yeah. When we look down the road in the decades ahead, in our lifetimes and certainly in our children's and grandchildren's lifetimes, there's a variety of factors. We're going to keep getting warmer. The train has left the station, and there's really no turning back. The atmosphere is warmer, and 90% of the greenhouse warming is being held by the oceans now and has warmed the oceans. So we're going to keep warming, and with that, more extreme summer heat, longer summer seasons, impacts on the growing season within the state. Precipitation-wise, the models that look into the future suggest we'll be as wet or perhaps even a little wetter, but that wetness is going to be more concentrated in the winter months rather than in the summer months. So we may have to be concerned about water availability with increasing heat and not necessarily increasing precipitation in our summers. With that, more extremes. We don't expect at this point more hurricanes, but they might be more severe when they make it here because the ocean waters are warmer so they can sustain their strength further up the coast. And then finally, there's sea level, speaking of the coast. Sea level is expected to rise a foot from about current levels by the middle of the century, and it's not out of the question it could be 3 feet higher by the end of this century. It may not sound like a lot, but that makes a big difference along coastal New Jersey with its massive infrastructure and simply the tourism industry, and you go on forth, transportation, and so on and so forth. So we've got a lot to look towards in the future. I won't say look forward to by any means, but the more we understand and the more we're prepared for the future, the better we'll be able to deal with it.
Well, I understand the three major airports that we have in New York and New Jersey are all below sea level. So that's going to be an interesting thing when the sea levels rise.
It's really quite interesting. I just finished sitting on a Port Authority committee. Was looking at climate change and extreme weather, and it was fascinating to learn about all their facilities. And the subject of sea level kept coming up because think about it, the bridges, the tunnels, the airports, the ports, they're all at near or below sea level.
Which is a problem when you look at sea level rising. I do know that the sandy damage to the tunnel that goes in for the trains, that the damage has been done there. A lot of discussion in transportation about replacing that because our economy is based upon that type of transportation. And that was just one storm at one time that could create such economic havoc.
Yeah.
It's amazing what it could do. Well, I think it's important that we also look at the fact that that climate itself, people use definitions, they see snow. They say, therefore, the Earth's not warming. There's snow. I think snow is also created by warmer climates.
Yeah, it's awfully interesting because actually one of the other hats I wear as a professor is I study global snow cover. I'm a polar scientist when I'm not serving as a state climatologist. And I've identified the early loss of spring snow cover across northern hemisphere lands. I've been writing about it for over 25 years. I'm astounded by the loss of sea ice in the Arctic, something I never thought I'd see. And I've been looking at that since college intern days with early satellite imagery. There's really quite a lot to be concerned about there. But it is possible that in some areas they may see more snow before less, because a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. And if that atmosphere is still below freezing, you can have more extreme snowfalls. And I've written one paper where we've looked at that in the northern Midwest, and we've seen an increase in large snowfall events. And it's simply because it's still cold enough to snow.
But the climate's getting warmer.
But the climate's getting warmer. So eventually we're going to trip over that magical 32 degree, that freezing mark, and we're going to see less of our snow, and those storms become rainstorms. But we haven't seen that yet. Even in New Jersey, we haven't seen a trend towards less snowfall. But we've seen some more in the way of extreme events.
Well, it's always been anecdotal. It's too cold to snow, and that's absolutely scientifically correct. When the temperature gets down below a certain temperature, the snow is not forming. But when you're talking about extreme, I mean, the snow itself now is facing a different types of things too, blizzard conditions and winds. It's changing that way too. I mean, we know it from our own looking in our own backyards. It's been incredible changes, and I think it's something that we've been looking at and talking about, but I'm not so sure we're doing enough about it. And that's one of the things I think we have to look at. So we think it's important that we plan for the future. And I think that's what we're going to be trying to do as we go through our segments and talking about those type of things. So let's take a little bit of a break, and then we'll come back and find out what else we can do locally and statewide.
Think it's safe to text or talk on your cell phone while you drive? No way, no how, not ever. Nearly 6,000 people died last year from distracted driving. So forget the phone and mind the road. Learn more about distracted driving at KMM.org or call Keep Middlesex Moving at 732-745-4465. That's KMM.org. Funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Move Time Radio, presented by the Arthritis Foundation. Yeah, get down and dance. You hear that? That's the sound of arthritis pain being moved, grooved, hustled, shuffled, juke, jive, junked, funked, shimmied, shook, and boogied. See, movement is just one of the ways to help fight osteoarthritis pain. Another is weight loss. You get rid of just 1 pound, that's 4 pounds of pressure off each knee. For more information on managing pain, wind and grind on over to fightarthritispain.org. This message brought to you by the Arthritis Foundation and the Ad Council.
Are you liking Keep Middlesex Moving on Facebook, following them on Twitter, and safely snapping pictures of your commute on Instagram? Connect with KMM Online and find out what everyone is talking about. Download the free NJ Traffic app, register for a carpool, get your New Jersey Transit bus and transit info, and access to their fantastic giveaway programs. To connect with KMM Online, log on to KMM.org and click on the Facebook and Twitter icon, funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore. A thought just then occurred to me I never thought before.
Well, welcome back. We're here with Dr. David Robinson, a Rutgers Distinguished Professor and New Jersey's own climatologist. We're also joined by Randall Solomon, the Executive Director of Sustainable Jersey, and the Honorable Mayor Gail Brill-Mittler, the Mayor of Highland Park. I'm Bill Neary, and I want to thank you all for joining us today. So before we took the little break, Dr. Robinson has shared the changes we are seeing in New Jersey's environment and the issues we're facing. Next, we have Randall Solomon. He's the Executive Director of Sustainable Jersey, with over 20 years' experience working in government, academia, and nonprofit sector. Randall is one of the principals that founded and directs the Sustainable Jersey Certification Program. But before we get into the certification program, I think we should start at the beginning because they've had a decade of impact. That's one of your logos. We like that. So what is sustainability? Give us a little brief survey or brief information about what sustainability really means, Randy.
Thanks, Mr. Neary, and thanks for having me on.
Well, Mr. Neary's not here today. Bill's here. Don't worry about it.
Mayor Neary. Excuse me, Mayor Neary. Thanks for having me on, and we think about sustainability as living today as if the future matters. And I think for a long time in New Jersey and in this country and in the world, we just have not done that. And when you look at public opinion polling, you see a vast majority of people in New Jersey and in the country say that they think the country's on the wrong track. Millennials are the first generation that think they're going to be worse off than their parents. Life expectancy in New Jersey and in the country is down for the first time in our history. So I think there's a general sense that we're not on a sustainable trajectory.
And I think that's some of the things Dr. Robinson was pointing out exactly. That's why I'm glad your organization can face these issues.
Yep. And I think undergirding a lot of that, when you think about there's more than one issue that could cause us to be unsustainable in the future, or you'd have to say, like, we can't really envision what life would be like in 10, 20, 30 years if we don't solve this issue. But, you know, the granddaddy of them all, the one that's really hanging over our heads, is climate change. And, you know, as, you know, Dave talked about a lot of the impacts, and it's not just that global warming and climate change means it's going to get warmer or the weather's going to change. There's a lot of impacts that are that will, if we don't address them and don't prepare for them, will diminish our quality of life. So, you know, where's our food going to come from? Most of our food does not come from New Jersey. It is shipped here from around the world, often in places that are, types of agriculture that are adapted to a particular climate. And when that climate changes, no one can really guarantee that, that food is going to continue to be produced. It's about thinking about the economic foundations of our livelihoods here in New Jersey, and why are people going to continue to send us their food and their natural resources and their money in the future? Where do we fit in? It's about thinking about the refugee crises that are going to possibly come about as there are food shortages and droughts and water. And so we have to think about the impacts of climate change in New Jersey and locally. What are we going to do to adapt to the things that are going to happen? But we also have to think about our role in and solving the climate crisis, what we can do locally to do our part to contribute to the solutions so this global phenomenon doesn't happen.
Well, I think the drought situation is something that we're looking at maybe in the wrong kind of way, because today I think the currency of the world is oil. I fear that someplace in the future the currency of the world might be water. And I think that's an issue that we have to address. Fresh water is limited. We have lots of water, not a whole lot to drink.
Yep.
And I know George Carlin always said, save the planet. A styrofoam cup is not going to kill the planet. What we want to do is save human life on the planet.
Right.
And I think that's where we're talking about the future. So when you're talking about sustainable Jersey, I mean, obviously we are small.
Mm-hmm.
have a lot of people.
We punch above our weight class.
We certainly have enough issues that we can address on a statewide level to make our adjustments that we need to make and kind of hopefully lead the world in some of these sustainable ideas.
Absolutely.
That as things can change. It took a long time to get this bad. It's going to take a little bit longer to get maybe back to good. But we have to work in that direction. And I think that's what your organization is all about. So you have a certification program mm-hmm. where towns can actually work with you in different ways to try and be sustainable. Can you give
right.
us a little background on what that's all about?
Absolutely. And as you said, we focus at the local level. And there needs to be work at the state level and at the federal level. We have a federal system of government and where we try to do as much local as we can, and we kick it up to higher levels of government when we need to. And nothing happens at the federal level unless it's tried in a few states first and it's successful. And nothing happens at the state level unless it's tried at the local level and tested out. And in New Jersey and in a lot of places, we're what's called a home rule state. There's a lot of authority at the local level and oftentimes a lot more authority than there is capacity for our dedicated, volunteer mayors and council people and small staffs to have to solve problems like climate change and energy and transportation policy.
But at the same time, that's one of the good things is that we have small towns that can do things themselves that doesn't have to come from on top. They can do it locally.
Absolutely.
And that's an improvement, actually. That's one of the good things about it.
It's a strength and a weakness, but we have to play to the strength of it.
Right.
And one of the good things is it's the level of government that is most trusted by people, and that's shown in polls again and again. They're much more likely to try something and to be bold if it's with their own local mayor and council people that they can see and that they trust more and they've got more control.
I'm sure the mayor will tell you that she can't go to 7-Eleven without having to be talking. The people have to talk to you all the time.
Right.
And the other thing about working at the local level, it's the unit of government that's closest to people. It's the unit of government that people trust the most. And so, as you say, we can just do stuff. So Sustainable Jersey, we provide the best practices and the specific actions, the ordinances, the policies, the planning exercises that we want these municipalities to do to solve these big picture issues. And climate's one of them, but we also deal with transportation and brownfields and downtown redevelopment, transportation, making communities more walkable and bikeable, and just better places to be. We deal with water. And when you talk about water, then, of course, there's flooding, and then there's drinking water, and then there's water pollution. We've got a recycling crisis in the state and in the country around the world. And we're producing more waste than we ever have. It's not going down. And then we also look at democracy and civic engagement. How do local governments engage the citizens in their communities around decision making? So we take a holistic look at not just the environment, but the economy and society, and say, again, what are the big issues that have some local solution? And we provide the specific things that the communities can do.
Well, and then part of that specific thing, though, is the carrots and sticks approach. I mean, your certification program is giving rewards for towns that really can get to certain levels.
Right.
And the certification program, I think, is something that at least sets the goals and the bar higher and higher for municipalities that really want to take the lead on this.
That's right. And we provide the tools, the resources, the training, and the grants to the local governments to implement these best practices. And then if they implement enough of them, it's a point system. It's pretty rigorous. We drive them crazy by saying a lot of times the things that they do aren't good enough to get points. But if they get enough points, they can become Sustainable Jersey certified. And right now in Middlesex County, there are 22 municipalities that are participating in Sustainable Jersey trying to get certified. Out of 25, so that's pretty good. And then there are 10 of those are actually certified, seven at the bronze level and three at the silver level. And then there's one that's actually at the gold level on energy and climate. Mayor Mittler from Highland Park, she represents one of the three leading towns, Highland Park. They're silver certified. And then the best in the bunch and the best in the state is Woodbridge Township, where they have actually done enough of our actions so that they're on a trajectory to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions such that if every municipality in the state were to perform at the same level, collectively, essentially, we'd solve the problem.
Well, we're working. That's the goal. That's exactly the goal.
That's the goal.
As a shameless plug, Keep Middlesex Moving also can work with municipalities to give them some extra points on a certification program for the transportation part we're talking about.
Absolutely. Sustainable Jersey works. It's a massive partnership. We're a nonprofit, but we work with state government. We work with the private sector. We work with all the NGOs. We work with a lot of individual, you know, state and regional agencies to try to agree on what are these key things that we want municipalities to do. And then we try to pool our resources, right, to say, you know, we recognize that local governments are not sitting around twiddling their thumbs with lots of free time and money waiting for us to think up new things for them to do. They need help to do it. And so the Sustainable Jersey Partnership brings together those entities, whether it's Keep Middlesex Moving and other TMAs around the state, again, state agencies, foundations, private, you know, corporations that have got resources. And we say, look, we all agree that these are the things that need to happen. So let's all pony up. You pony up technical assistance. Other people pony up grants. But we try to provide the resources on the ground. And one other thing, statewide, because of this program, municipalities, we also have a schools program as well. That's a little bit newer. But the participants in Sustainable Jersey are implementing over 5,000 of these discrete actions from our certification program and submitting documentary evidence to us that they've done it. And you can view it all on our website. You can go on our website. There's a big map. You can click on it. You can see what your town is doing, or you can see what your town's not doing. And if they're not doing something, feel free to, you know, give your mayor hell and tell them you want to join.
Well, you're also talking about the schools program is one important part, I think, because it's so much a part of all our communities. But at the same time, you said about the ponying up. There are some grants that come through Sustainable Jersey mm-hmm. to help municipalities over some of the hurdles. It's certainly not going to solve all of the problems. We don't anticipate that kind of money coming in. But at the same time, it's certainly an incentive program to do some of the things to get you started on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where one of the nice things that Sustainable Jersey looks at, because you also have an opportunity to compare. And I'm never in favor of giving mayors hell, by the way, just so you know. But at the same time, I think encouragement might be a better way to look at it for a sustainable part.
Sure.
And I congratulate you on the work that you're doing. Now, you have you work also through the university, right?
We're based out of the College of New Jersey, and it's Sustainable Jersey is kind of a public-private partnership, so it's a nonprofit. But it works very closely with the state, and being at the College of New Jersey makes sense because we're a standards organization. So, you know, we have that academic rigor when we're evaluating what the communities are doing to make sure that it actually meets meaningful tests for being impactful and solving the problems that we need to solve.
Well, what I also think is important is you say you're working on the municipalities, but usually it's a green team or it's some environmental group or somebody who's really taking the charge to really try and get these type of things implemented.
That's true.
Which I think is really important on a grassroots level. And grassroots might be the best way to describe sustainable type of stuff when we're talking about climate and changes that's going to be happening. These are the people who are going to be involved to try and help the municipalities, because there's
absolutely
a million other things that mayors and councils are doing. To be able to have that kind of assistance from people in the community is really an important part.
That's right. The one mandatory thing a community has to do to be in Sustainable Jersey is they have to form a green team or a sustainability commission. We don't care what they call it, but there has to be a formal body of local government created by the governing body and given the charge to try to get Sustainable Jersey certified and implement this stuff. Now, a lot of them are volunteers. Most communities have a council liaison, or they'll send the public works director or the business administrator or someone to participate as well, because there are parts of it that have to be done by the town. Some things have to be done by the town. So if it's recycling and waste or making the municipal buildings more efficient, an ordinance, the government actually has to do it. If it's outreach into the community and getting individuals to change their behavior, then that's the thing that the volunteers can do. But the thing that it really does is it takes people, concerned citizens at the local level who want to do something, who might be intimidated by the massiveness of these problems, and gives them discrete, successful things that they can do in their town. And they sort of become the nags in chief. So you've got a busy business administrator and a busy mayor, and there's a million things on their plate. And what the green teams do is they nag them. They nag them and nag them and nag them and say, mayor, why can't we do X? And a response from a mayor often will be like, they'll go to the overwhelmed business administrator and say, can we do this? And the business administrator will say, no, we can't do that. Forget it. It's impossible. And then the green team will go and say, well, look, it just so happens that Highland Park did it and Woodbridge did it. So how could it be impossible if we can look around and see all these other towns that have done it? And so one thing we've done is we've created virtuous competition among the towns to be the best on sustainability, and also to be – And we've created a meaningful standard for what it means to be green. And I'll give you a little example. I happen to live in Highland Park. And when I moved there, the mayor at the time, several mayors ago, was touting Highland Park as the first green town in New Jersey. And she had done a couple of things. And then when Sustainable Jersey came out and actually had some objective criteria, Highland Park was nowhere near the greenest town.
Still claim to be.
Well, now Highland Park is one of the greener towns, but that was because of subsequent work. Once the sort of the gauntlet was laid down and there were objective standards for what it means to be green in terms of, again, addressing your brownfields, reducing your greenhouse gas emissions, making your town more walkable, doing things to support local food, addressing water and equity and, you know, a lot of other things. You know, you've seen towns step up, and I think we try to help. We put the nags in chief on the ground, but we also give them the successful pathways that are well researched and well resourced to actually have success.
Well, Randy, you're also making it sound like a massive project, which it is to get all the certification. But if a community and a green team only does one or two or three things that doesn't make the certification possible, they've still done something. And I think that's what we're looking at. Anything that takes these little steps to keep moving in that direction is an improvement and certainly an important issue. So we're going to take another little break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Pedestrians and motorists share the responsibility of keeping our roadways safe. Pedestrians must obey all signs and signals and use marked crosswalks, or they can be ticketed and fined. Motorists in New Jersey must stop and stay stopped for pedestrians in marked crosswalks. Failure to do so can result in motor vehicle points, fines, insurance surcharges, and community service. Remember, pedestrian safety is a shared responsibility.
Brought to you by the New Jersey Division of Highway Traffic Safety.
The odds of having a boy who grows up loving baseball.
1 in 6.
Which earns him a college scholarship.
1 in 2,500.
That gets him a contract in the minors.
1 in 3,700.
Which leads to starting shortstop in the majors.
1 in 290,000.
The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism.
1 in 150. You know the odds. Now learn the signs. Go to autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Think it's safe to text or talk on your cell phone while you drive? No way, no how, not ever. Nearly 6,000 people died last year from distracted driving. So forget the phone and mind the road. Learn more about distracted driving at KMM.org or call Keep Middlesex Moving at 732-745-4465. That's KMM.org. Funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore. A thought just then occurred to me I never thought before. I've been a lot of places, seen pictures of...
I want to welcome you back to segment 3. Welcome back to Mobility Matters. We're here with Dr. David Robinson, a Rutgers Distinguished Professor and New Jersey's climatologist. Randall Solomon, the Executive Director of Sustainable Jersey. And Mayor Gail Brill-Mittler, the Mayor of Highland Park. I'm Bill Neary, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Mayor, we're going to be talking about sustainability on a local angle. We've already heard from Randy about the silver certification of little tiny Highland Park, right? The borough is doing a great job, and I want to congratulate you. So you've adopted a green community plan. You're achieving a community with a healthy environment, healthy people, a convenient transportation, and a fairness and equality in your town, which is admired by everybody else in Middlesex County and probably in the state. So what makes you think that Highland Park should have a green community plan, and your status and where you are in terms of moving ahead? I do know you already have got to pass the new ban on plastic bags.
Yes, we did.
Which is an interesting start.
Yes, and kudos to Randy and his nags on the ground. because in true democracy, the actual plastic bag ban came to us through our Sustainable Highland Park team. They did the research. We conducted open public meetings to discuss the program.
Well, I think that's always important. If you're going to do something that's going to have people object to it. You know that.
Right.
And the businesses themselves. So the fact that you can do that is the best way to start.
Yeah, I joined Tina Weishaus, who's the chair of our Sustainable Highland Park Commission. I joined her in meeting with several of our businesses in town and explaining the importance of the new ordinance. There are millions of bags that enter our water stream, and the most horrifying story out of all of it was to recognize that the fish are actually eating these bags, and the bags turn to plastic beads inside their system. They are caught, and then we eat them. I became a grandmother recently, and the thought of my little grandson growing up in this kind of environment and eating these kinds of poisonous foods was quite disturbing. So the plastic bag ban was a natural for us. We followed the lead of other states in the union and other countries across the country, across the world. And met with our state legislators who are considering the same sort of ban down in Trenton so that we could be consistent with what they were planning on doing as well.
But I think that's what Randy and I were talking about in terms of home rule. I mean,
right.
The state is going to look at it in a different way of looking at it. And certainly when they do it on a statewide level, there may be a lot less nags in chief to go along with it. There'll be some nags in chief and those who are totally against it. And so on a local level, you can start it and show how it works and how it actually
right.
can be effective.
Right.
So when it does happen, it's not going to surprise everybody, because I do believe you're right. The plastic bags are an issue that has to be addressed. And that's,
absolutely.
Congratulations on that. That's a leadership
Thank
once
you.
Again.
Thank you.
But you also have a microgrid in Highland Park.
Well, we have a grant from the BPU to do a feasibility study for a microgrid. Interestingly, Highland Park is considered a donut community. We get our energy from both Edison on the northernmost part of our town and New Brunswick on the southernmost part of our town. And when Sandy happened, our community was down for close to 2 weeks in parts of the community. Then we got back up, and a week later, there was a fire in the Edison substation. So we were down again. And we have limited space where we could invite people in for warming centers or charging centers. What the microgrid would allow us to do is keep our municipal buildings, our housing authorities, one of our schools, the police station, the fire department, open and running so that there would be places for our residents to go to keep warm or air conditioned, depending on the time of year, and also for our public safety team to be able to address any issues that might come up.
And that's planning for the future, obviously, because
obviously,
we all think, Sandy was not a one-time thing based upon discussions that we're having. We know we're going to be facing these issues in the future.
Yes, and unfortunately it's good, at least, so.
If we can't stop it, we might as well make sure we ameliorate the whole issue.
And we are on the banks of the Raritan.
You're on the banks of the Raritan. There you go. Transportation, by the way. That was a good place for transportation. But you also have a Solar for All program that you're working on?
Yeah, this is very exciting. In fact, they're breaking ground on it, I believe, next week. This is a program that we are putting together with PSE&G. We had an underutilized former dump site in town that could not be used for anything. And they came to us with a research project that they have. They will be renting this piece of land and putting a solar farm on it so that they can do some research on what happens to the solar energy when it goes to the batteries and then gets sent to the grid. So that is very exciting to us. And in fact, if we do move further along with the microgrid feasibility study and actually get a microgrid, we have some really exciting plans for that solar field to hook into the microgrid, which would allow us then to expand all the way down Fifth Avenue to include the supermarket that is there so that food would stay fresh, the high school across the road, and the public library.
Wow, that's great. Because I know we did our EV show a couple of weeks ago. We had talks about how the grid itself can actually benefit from electric vehicles. The use of the way you can keep a maintain a level of production, and at the same time be able to have the charging stations provide the money, the grid electricity, getting it back from the cars. So the grid is very important when we look at the infrastructure,
right,
especially with these climate changes that are going to be occurring. When we have, I mean, if you remember, I think it was Irene, it was more trees coming down than the weather itself that created the weather created the trees coming down, but it wasn't like snow or anything else that caused that kind of problem. So you also want to do things on the municipal level with your buildings. Your own municipal buildings you're responsible for were built more than 10 years ago. They probably weren't as energy efficient as they could have been if you looked ahead, but now you're making those kind of retrofits.
Yeah, so the buildings were probably built in the most of them were built in the 1970s. And so we are engaging in an energy efficiency study so that we can determine the best way to move forward in maximizing energy usage within our public buildings.
Are you working with the school systems in that way too? You're going to be able to do things perhaps and see what you can do and maybe buy into some of those ideas.
Well, we have a very good relationship with the school superintendent, and so we'll be including him in any of our findings, of course.
Randy, you live in Highland Park, so you know some of the things that's going on there.
I do, but I'm also very familiar with the state programs that I think Highland Park is taking advantage of. And so, you know, the State Board of Public Utilities has very lucrative, effective programs that can help municipalities make their buildings more energy efficient, which lowers the greenhouse gas emissions, but also lowers the tax burden. And every municipality should, and every school should take advantage of them. And you can look on the state's clean energy website to find out about that. And similarly, if listeners are wondering what they can do themselves, I mean, absolutely, you can go out and buy an EV, but you can make your homes more energy efficient in just the same way. And there's a state program called the Home Performance with Energy Star program, or if you're low income, it's called the Comfort Partners program. But in a nutshell, it will make your house more comfortable. It will make you less responsible for the climate catastrophe that's on the way, and it will save you money.
That's all good stuff. Let's take one more break, and we'll be back for a little discussion around the tables.
Are you liking Keep Middlesex Moving on Facebook, following them on Twitter, and safely snapping pictures of your commute on Instagram? Connect with KMM online and find out what everyone is talking about. Download the free NJ Traffic app, register for a carpool, get your New Jersey Transit bus and transit info, and access to their fantastic giveaway programs. To connect with KMM online, log on to KMM.org and click on the Facebook and Twitter icon, funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Pedestrians and motorists share the responsibility of keeping our roadways safe. Pedestrians must obey all signs and signals and use marked crosswalks, or they can be ticketed and fined. Motorists in New Jersey must stop and stay stopped for pedestrians in marked crosswalks. Failure to do so can result in motor vehicle points, fines, insurance surcharges, and community service. Remember, pedestrian safety is a shared responsibility.
Brought to you by the New Jersey Division of Highway Traffic Safety.
This is Tom Skerritt for the Borgen Project. Each year, nearly 2 million children die from preventable diseases. Each day, 30,000 people die from hunger. 500 each hour are children. The Borgen Project is turning this around. We need your help. To learn more, go to borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore.
I want to welcome you back to Mobility Matters. We're here with Dr. David Robinson, the Rutgers Distinguished Professor and New Jersey's climatologist, Randall Solomon, the Executive Director of Sustainable Jersey, and Mayor Gail Brill-Mittler, the Mayor of Highland Park. I'm Bill Neary, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. We've been talking about sustainability, talking about it on a state level, a regional level, and especially on a local level. I think all those type of things are important that we look at, how difficult, how complicated, and how extremely necessary it is to think about this looking in the future. I think the mayor's point about her grandchild is the big light bulb that makes it everything seem possible. We can all think of today, but if we don't think of tomorrow, it's going to be a real problem. And I appreciate all the talent that I have in this room to be able to share some of these things. So is there any important action that we'd like our state leaders to actually do that they can take us from a local level to a state level to work together? I think the plastic bag ban was one of the things we could talk about. But there's other things, perhaps, that we can affect New Jersey's environment, whether it's wind farms or even the regulations concerning the storm drain management. Mayor, you had something?
Yeah, I've been meeting with the Department of Transportation pretty consistently over the last, 10 years, trying to help them change the culture there. The Department of Transportation has a car culture. Highland Park is a municipality of nearly 15,000 residents, sandwiched between two of the largest municipalities in Middlesex County, New Brunswick and Edison. My population more than doubles during the daytime when nearly 25,000 cars drive through Highland Park on Route 27.
So your main street is a state highway.
Yes, it is. It is. And if we really are concerned about greenhouse gases and emissions, then as a state, we need to address pedestrian and bicycle safety, transportation, shuttles in a bigger way. We seem to be much more concerned with the individual cars driving on the road than we are with mass transit or bicycles and pedestrians.
Well, to defend the Department of Transportation, which is never an easy thing to do, there has been a paradigm shift. Perhaps you're the ones who are so important in making it happen. They still think car-centric society is what we need, but there certainly is complete streets policies now. There are certainly some more investments going into bicycle and pedestrian safety. And hopefully, as we see more investment into mass transit, because that's really going to be critical for the future, especially with automatic vehicles, the autonomous vehicles coming in, EVs, things are going to be changing. We are seeing changes. I think DOT may have reached a point where they said, we'll never build our way out of congestion. And hopefully that'll make some of these changes you're talking about.
Well, I hope so.
Dave, you got something you think is really the first thing we should do if we're going to look at it on a state level?
Well, I think energy usage, getting greener with our energy and using less energy, period. That would be one of the top issues, I think, is at hand. That's why I'm so excited about the offshore wind programs that are developing and even the solar. I mean, New Jersey used to be a leader in solar energy. It kind of fell by the wayside in the last decade or so, but I think there's room to pick up again. That's one issue I think is important. The other has been mentioned earlier is water. We all need water. We can deal with temperatures a little warmer, an occasional extreme event. But if we get into periods of drought and we don't manage our water well, we're going to be in a heap of big trouble. And so I think that's something we really need to keep the eye out in the future, both on the state and local level. And, of course, it's a global aspect to that as well, fresh water. So those are, I would say, the energy side and the water side of the issue are so tied into climate and climate change that they need a heck of a lot of attention.
And you can see how it impacts locally. I mean, I think the concept you're talking about actually ends up back on Main Street in Highland Park or Raritan. But at the same
Absolutely.
Time, I think that's the important part. We look on a higher level, looking down, how it definitely impacts individuals. And that's why our guest nags in chief here is also probably working on a state level. Randy Solomon is making sure that Sustainable Jersey becomes more of a policy for the state as much as it is locally.
Well, Sustainable Jersey actually exclusively works at the local level. And I think one of the reasons why we're in 80% of the municipalities in New Jersey is because we stay out of statewide politics. And I think there are a few people that would look at the state of our national politics and say, oh, it's great. Never been better. it's challenging to, once you work at higher levels of, government and politics, it becomes increasingly ideological and partisan with entrenched positions. But when you're working at the local level and you're sitting across a table at a committee meeting or a public hearing from your neighbors and your kids went to school, it's a lot harder to look at them and, you know, call them a fascist or a communist and engage in the culture wars and all of that. It's dealing with people. And so we're in an equal number of municipalities that are led by Republicans and Democrats and independents. So we do focus at the local level and we try to have our impact bottom up. But having said that, you know, it's clear that the state is making major investments in wind energy, which is a huge deal. And, you know, our energy, a lot of it is produced in state. A lot of it comes from out of state. So at the same time, we're producing more wind energy and offshore wind energy. The state needs to get the grid to work. You've already talked a little bit about that because that solar and wind energy doesn't necessarily get produced right when we need it. It has to get stored somewhere in batteries, could be in electric vehicles. But then at the same time, if we just keep using more and more energy, which we traditionally have, then we haven't gotten anywhere. So we have to have energy efficiency. I already mentioned that the BPU, through its New Jersey Clean Energy Program, has got a really strong slate of programs that can help individuals as well as small businesses and local governments reduce their greenhouse gas emissions and save energy and save money by making their homes, their offices, their buildings more energy efficiency. So that building efficiency is a critical piece. And then electric vehicles are a big deal. So there's a lot that needs to happen to make alternative fuel vehicles viable, a lot that has to happen at the federal level, a lot that has to happen and is happening at the state level, including placement of like fast charging stations at all the rest stops and getting the pricing right. But there's a lot that has to happen at the local level. I mean, if you're talking about all of a sudden having electric vehicles in every town, there needs to be new ordinances that say new construction has to be pre-wired to enable electric vehicles of the future. And there has to be there has to be parking management. So who gets to park where and what's going to happen with these spots? And these are little nitty-gritty things that towns have to figure out.
And I agree wholeheartedly about the electric vehicles. But there is a economic and social justice equity issue with electric vehicles and EV charging stations that we need to address as a state as well, because if we are going to move towards more electric vehicles, we have to make them affordable to all of our residents and make the EV charging stations very accessible.
I think car sharing is a potential strong solution for that. And electric vehicle car sharing, is something that's being piloted in a number of sustainable Jersey towns. That is where you have a number of electric vehicles that are charging all the time. And just like regular car sharing, people can create an account, have a little app, and then they can reserve those cars and drive them at a pretty low cost all the time, you know, anytime they want. And one of the things with EVs is they cost more upfront, but they potentially save you over the lifetime of the vehicle because it is much cheaper to run your car on electricity than on gasoline. So the question is, how can we help people get those EVs in the first place?
Well, I think the marketplace is going to be making those changes. You're going to see much more competition. The pricing you're talking about is certainly going to be – it's already coming down and adjusted. So there's going to be things that are happening, and I think Randy is probably right about the ride-sharing concept is going to change dramatically. I mean –
yeah, I love that idea.
From our transportation world, we know that today a child born today may never have to learn how to drive a car. So – I think it's great that we're looking at things happening in terms of how people are using transportation and sustainable parts. It's all going to be one component as we look into the future. So as we're getting ready to wrap up and everything else, just give me one word about what an individual can do. Maybe, or Professor, you want to add something important here?
I think the underlying theme of all of this in the last hour has been the word trust.
Exactly.
And to sum it up, our credo as state climatologists is local trusting locals. I've worked with Randy in Sustainable Jersey. It's fabulous. And you can trust that they're taking the best interest of our citizens into account. And the mayor is a perfect example of how it can work well at the local level. So trust us.
I think that's the absolute best way to wrap this up, because if we all work together and we all can trust each other's doing the right things, our future is going to be brighter. So I want to thank you all for joining us today. This has been an excellent show. I think your knowledge and your ability to do things has made it a great show. Thank you.
Wait.